Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. A career in music is far from easy, but for Nashville-based Kyle Elliott, it's just one of many that he's got going on. In this episode, we look at his work in music, but also running businesses with his family, and how he balances everything. Kyle shares the challenges faced with his start in music, and how getting fired from his day job wound up being the best thing that ever happened.
You know, I want to open by asking you about growing up in Nashville. Now, I've heard from so many musicians that this is a musical playground, but what was it like for you being a part of it?
Well, Nashville has always been the country music home, but it hasn't always been the it city that it is today. Obviously, everybody wants to go to Nashville right now. You know, it's become the bachelorette capital of the world. It's where everybody comes to party and have a good time, and of course, listen to country music. But growing up, I was born in the early 90s, and growing up during that time, Nashville was not an it city. There was nothing that really attracted people other than country music. You know, today there's at least tourism that goes hand in hand with that. Back then it was, you know, it wasn't a big town at all. It's still not really even that big of a town as far as geographically. And so living on the outskirts of town, it really wasn't that big of a deal. You know, back in the day we used to have Opryland, which was like a country music theme park, which they tore down, which was like the biggest mistake they ever made here in Nashville. So we went to that a lot, but as far as country music goes, we really didn't go downtown. You know, it's kind of one of those things where if you're a local, you stay away from all of those, you know, places that the tourists go to, and Broadway was kind of that. But I grew up listening to country music. I actually really grew up listening to all kinds of music. My dad was a big, like kind of 80s rock guy. My mom always loved her 70s. And I have an older sister who was listening to NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. So I was kind of forced into a good realm of music. But it has changed a lot over the past couple of decades. And, you know, I'm still happy to call Nashville home, but it's definitely not the same town that I grew up in.
So when the shift happened and it became more of this like musical center, what was like your experience during that?
Well, as I got older, you know, and like in high school and things, we would go downtown occasionally, you know, me and my friends, and there were places down there that were not country at all. They were like 18 and up kind of dance clubs. It wasn't even necessarily a tourist honky tonk style place. But as that transitioned, which was about 2010, 2011, you kind of just saw the city come alive. People just started dumping money and investing it into Nashville. And I, at the time, I was not a country music singer. I was, you know, I was a musician, but I didn't have, you know, that drive to be a Broadway performer. But it was nice to see that there was entertainment happening, and then I didn't have to go somewhere like New York or California in order to pursue that type of industry. But it was really great to see that the city had something to hold on to and something to invest themselves in, which was just great for the state and for the city altogether, obviously financially. But it was just good to give more people opportunity.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And like you said, people are always wanting to go to Nashville. They move there. I had some friends who just moved there like a little while ago, and it seems to be the perfect fit for them. Have you experienced like the large influx of folks just going into the area, and like how you think it's changed it?
Yeah, we definitely have growing pains. That is, there's no question about that. You know, we were I don't even think Nashville was on the map for like cities. When you like looked at a map of the Southeast, it was just so small. I mean, even before 2000, I think, you know, I don't even think the city was over a million people. I think today it's like almost at 3 million, you know, just exploded with the amount of people. It has caused, you know, the cost of everything in the city has gone up. You know, Broadway, you're paying $8 to $10 a beer, where, you know, here in my town, which I'm like 45 minutes away now, I can get it for like $1. So, you know, there's a huge, huge flux of price. But you know, it does take a toll on the locals. A lot of people had to move out because of property taxes that went up. You know, the neighborhoods are not like the 1950 style houses anymore. They're like these shotgun San Francisco style houses that are 4 feet or 4 stories tall, and you know, just a crazy change. And if you drive through, you can actually still see the old versus the new, and they're sometimes literally right next to each other. It's definitely taking some adapting to, but with the industry that I'm in, the music industry, it's ever changing. And so I just have to adapt on the go. And obviously there are a lot of perks to it, but there are some cons. You know, I do miss the quiet town that I grew up in. I do miss kind of just that feeling where it wasn't always rushed. You know, in the South, things were slow. You know, people like to say that. In Nashville, that is not the case. Things are fast, fast paced in downtown Nashville.
So you mentioned growing up in a very like musical household, but what steered you towards actually performing?
Well, my mother is a high school music teacher, specifically the choir teacher. So I was kind of forced into doing that as a kid, which means I was on stage and I sang in every musical group that there was to sing in. When I went to college, I actually originally went to college for vocal performance, which was all classically trained stuff, which I had a very long background in at that point. And I did enjoy that, but it's not what I wanted to do. There's not a huge industry for classical music that is a very successful one. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go to the other side of things. I kind of changed my direction and said, you know, I could see myself in a studio recording music for other people. So I went into audio production. I'm a musician because I'm not good at math. So I did have to kind of adjust my thought process a little bit more because audio production does take a lot of math as well. So I ended up going into radio and television, which was my final kind of place where I landed for my degree. And it taught me a lot about the behind the scenes work of the entertainment industry. And going through college, I was in like an alternative rock band for about 5 years, but that was nothing that was ever super serious. So going through college, I really wasn't performing a whole lot. And I was really focused on getting my degree and going out and finding a job that obviously paid the bills. And about a year after I got out of college working as a marketing director for a transportation company, woke up one day and I was like, this sucks. I hate what I'm doing. And I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And you know, I was 23 at the time. And I said, if I'm going to go do what I love, I got to do it now, or else I'm not going to be able to. And so I did. I just started writing music and found open doors where I could go perform at an open mic night, met a few people, one thing led to another. And, you know, 5 years later, here we are. But musically, you know, growing up, I think my mother was a huge influence there. I don't think anybody ever thought that I would be a performer like I am. But as I grew up, you know, and started performing, I think everybody realized that I had a true passion for it. And my family has always been very supportive in anything that I wanted to do. So really thankful for that, because a lot of people don't have that at home. And so I'm really grateful that my family think that I am talented enough to do this. So that's a great thing.
I think it's really great, that your folks did support this, because like you said, they don't always do this. You know, like sometimes you tell them, hey, mom, dad, I want to be a musician. And there's that, oh God, we've lost him. He's going to be living here until he's like 50, you know?
Exactly.
We're never going to get him out of the house. But do they ever offer any practical like industry advice for you when you said, okay, I'm doing music?
Not really, you know, because high school choir teachers don't necessarily consider themselves in the music industry. And the industry itself, I mean, I've worked hundreds of different types of jobs. I've worked in construction, security. I've worked in, you know, customer service. I've done marketing. I've done literally so many different things. And there is no other industry that is like the entertainment industry. It is cutthroat, you know, best one wins. Like, you know, you have to just give it all you have. And I had no guidance going into that. I had no mentors when I started. My family didn't have the slightest clue. There was nobody in my family that had ever been in that industry. So I kind of went in blind and I made a lot of mistakes along the way. But I think you have to fail a lot of times in order to learn a lot of the lessons that you need to learn. And I have. And the one thing that my parents always told me is, if you're going to do this, you got to go in all, you got to go all in. You can't just half-ass it, right? And, you know, just give up halfway through when things get hard. You have to go through. And they've taught me that my whole life. So I think that plays a big role in it. But I have made mentors as I've, you know, gone through my musical career, and I have met people that have given me great advice, and I'm very thankful for them because they've kept me from making some big mistakes. And they've also helped me a great deal as far as just, you know, upping my career and promoting me, because they believe in what I'm doing. So super thankful for those people too.
I think probably like the thing to tell someone going into music that it is going to suck. The first like few years are going to suck. It's going to be brutal. You're going to play for a crowd of like five people. You know, you're going to have to get a second job just to pay everything.
Yep.
Because it's so hard. But your early years, were they really hard? Did you ever hit any points where you thought, that's it, I quit, I'm done?
Absolutely. So I bought my house in 2017. I'd been at my marketing job for about a year. And 2 weeks after I bought my house, I was fired from my job. And that was also pursuing music. I had just released a song about 3 months earlier, my first song. And I was unemployed for about 4 months and struggled. I mean, struggled to find work. I worked under the table side job construction for a pastor friend of mine in the next town over for months just to pay my bills, just to get by. And I had to do, you know, when I finally did get a job, it was terrible. I took a huge pay cut. I worked as a manager for an apartment complex, and all on the side, I was playing my music, and there were obstacles in the way. One of the biggest turning points was working at that apartment complex. During the summer months, they actually do what's called a turnover. So they go in and they refurbish all the apartments, and basically you're working 7 days a week for about 8 weeks. And you don't get any time off. And I had an opportunity to play a show at the biggest county fair in the state of Tennessee, which is my home county fair. And I was like, I'm not missing this opportunity. And they're like, well, you can't take off. And I was like, okay, then I quit. And I walked away from it. It was really at that point I knew that even though I had been aspiring to become a musician, it was at that point I said, nothing else is going to get in the way. Nothing else is going to keep me from doing what I love to do, because I'd come so far, and I realized that every other part of my working life was miserable in compared to when I was on stage performing. And you know, one thing led to another. I started playing more and more, and I found an amazing job that allowed me to work about 3 to 4 hours a day, maybe 3 or 4 days a week, and paid me more than any other job I had ever made prior to that. And that happened to be a tour guide in Nashville. When I was in college, I actually was a campus tour guide, so I had some experience, and I was working in a bar downtown after that apartment job, making like 10 bucks an hour. And this lady walked in who was a tour guide, and she said, hey, my company's hiring if you're interested. And I was like, okay, sure. And you know, this was summer or winter of 2019. And I said, screw it. Why not? I've come this far. What else can happen? And it took off like a rocket. And like I said, I was working 3 to 4 days a week, 3 to 4 hours a day. So I could work that during the day, and then I could go play my shows at night. And it was just fantastic. And so I started building up my repertoire, and actually one of the businesses that we worked with on that tour was a venue. And so I got to know the management really well. And I said, hey, I'd love to play here if you know, that's an option. And they said, well, if somebody calls out, we'll give you a call. And about 2 months after that, they called me on a Friday at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They said, can you be here in an hour? And I said, yeah, you don't say no, right? So I took the opportunity, and I went and played, and I played there for over a year, and made some other great connections with other artists. And one thing led to another. And now I'm playing on Broadway 5 days a week, touring whenever I get the chance to do that. And it all has come from the thing before it. So to answer your question, yes, it's been tough. And a lot of times I felt like giving up. I believe everything happens for a reason. And that's why I went through everything I did to get where I am now.
Wow. I just think you could still be at that marketing job.
Yep. I think about that very often. And I think, thank God I am not there.
Thank God. Like, do you ever think, thank God I got fired?
Yeah, honestly. You know, that was a horrible situation that I was in. My boss hated me. My company was actually discriminating against me pretty hard, but I was in no position to fight that. And you know, that's not even something I wouldn't even get into, but it was just such a exhausting point in my life where I didn't feel appreciated in what I was doing. And I was giving it my all. Like I was working, there was one shift I worked, it was 32 hours straight working for that company. And just no gratitude on the back end of it. And I'm a firm believer in working hard to earn your living. And I was working hard, but I was not earning my living. And I definitely didn't feel appreciated. So I'm very thankful that I had that opportunity, because it did give me some connections during that marketing job to get where I am now. But I am thankful. And I told myself, I'm never going back. You will never find me working a 9-to-5 ever again. I was this close during COVID, but that's a very extreme measure, right?
I would say if a global pandemic cannot push you back to that job, nothing will.
Nothing will. I'd have to die, honestly.
you would have to die, and then have to like drag your corpse back there and put you at your desk.
Exactly. That would be the thing, because I mean, there was one day during the pandemic, I woke up and I was like, I got to pay my bills. And I about drove down to the warehouse down the street to be an Amazon warehouse worker for $15 an hour, working 50 hours a week. And I was like, I just can't do it. And I found myself on that application page more times than I care to admit, but I never pulled that trigger, and I'm thankful that I didn't.
Do you mind telling me how you managed to keep things going when everything just shut down?
Sure. So I was fortunate enough to have worked at that bar that I mentioned briefly. And that was I'd worked there from like October of 2018 to February of 2019. And the tour company I was working for, I was a 1099 employee, which did not have unemployment insurance. So I was able to file unemployment from the bar that I worked at in 2019 during COVID, which means I was getting about $100 a week to live on, which is, again, nothing, right? That's, I mean, you're cutting me down to a fraction of what I was making. And after, the first stimulus check came through, I made the smartest move I have ever made in my entire life. I took all $1,200 of that first stimulus check and I put it into Tesla on the stock market. And I have been living off of that for about the past 12 months. So, and between the other stimulus checks, and obviously there were some benefits on the back of the unemployment that gave me a couple of boosts throughout the year. But about June or July, I started playing shows again, which brought in revenue, and that's not considered a full-time job. So I was still able to collect my unemployment through that. A lot of loopholes, a lot of hoops that I had to jump through to make sure that I was able to keep those things. And I'm not somebody that likes to not work. I like to earn my work or my living. And so being on unemployment was kind of a moral difficulty for me because I'd never been on unemployment before. I don't like to rely on other people for things. But I will say it was there when it was used for what it was needed for in that point in time. And I'm completely financially stable again. I was able to put my mortgage on a forbearance plan to where I could just basically put all my payments to the end of my mortgage payment. But we're back up. We're good to go. And I'm not back to where I was, but I'm very close. So it was a tough ride, but we made it.
That is such a great story that you took the stimulus check, put it into like Tesla stock, and now you just were able to like live off of that.
I took a very, very big gamble.
That sounds like the majority of your life, though. It sounds like a lot of this is just taking chances, working hard, and they pay off.
That's it. And I like to consider myself the black sheep of my family. Looking at everybody else, my sister runs her own company. My cousin's an electrician. My parents both work 40-hour Monday through Friday jobs. Nobody in my family is like that outcast kind of worker except for me. So, everybody was like, okay, that's what he's going to do. And I have I have a very supportive family, but it was terrifying. But I'm very faithful in saying that everything happens for a reason. And when you just kind of go for it, nothing scares me anymore. Honestly, nothing scares me. I could lose my house. I could lose literally everything. It doesn't matter to me. Those are just things that can eventually be replaced. And to hear some of the other stories that some other people in my industry have gone through, as far as country music goes, Jimmy Allen's a great example. He lived in his car for 4 months and showered at the Planet Fitness, right? He did what he had to do to make his dreams come true. And I'm willing to do the same thing, even if it means costing me just about everything. The only thing I will not give up are the loved ones in my life. And luckily they're on my side to begin with. So I don't ever foresee that happening.
Well, I certainly hope you don't ever have to hit that point where you're like living out of your car and showering at the Planet Fitness.
Well, I think I'm past that point. In college, I minored in entrepreneurship, and I always wanted to work for myself. And so I have started two other businesses on the side of being a musician, which have also paid a lot of back end money. And both of those were started during COVID, which was an interesting time to start a business. But again, that Tesla money went to good use.
Wow. What are the other businesses?
So my family and I actually started a disinfecting company, but it's a multi-purpose company. So we have a chemical that we spray that actually kills COVID, which is great. People, that are worried about that, we go in and spray their home or their business. But we also kill mold and mildew, and it's an odor eliminator too. So we can go in and like spray for smells or whatever. And then the other business I have is a mobile bartending company. Like I mentioned before, I worked for a bar and I really, really enjoy the creative process of like mixology. And I went to a wedding where I stood in line for 25 minutes to get a beer And I said, that's unacceptable. And a family friend of mine owns a wedding venue. And she goes, hey, I know you were a bartender. Would you want to come bartend at my venue? The last bartender we had got so drunk that he backed into our building. And so I had this idea. I was like, well, why don't I just start my own bartending company where I go and bartend events on the road? And it's been unbelievably successful. It's something that I never thought I would do, but it kind of came to me and said, hey, this needs to happen. And I'm the type of person that likes to grab life by the horns and go with what opportunity comes my way. So started that, and it's just over a year old now, and it's more successful than I could have ever imagined.
I'm curious how you balance all this out with like music, because it definitely sounds like music is a full-time job. You run the business with your family, and you also run this business. How do you keep one from like toppling over?
I don't, is the honest answer. I just kind of take it as it comes. My schedule is never the same ever, which is the hardest part of what I do, because like this week, I'm traveling to Florida for a wedding that I'm playing in. And I'm usually playing downtown. So I've got a gig on Wednesday night. I have to drive 3 hours to a gig on Thursday night, be back in Nashville Friday morning to get on a plane to fly down to Florida for 3 days, then come back and play a show the hour I get back into town. A lot of it is luck to make sure that it falls in the place that it needs to be. I know my manager gets on me sometimes. She's like, you gotta let me know when stuff is happening. I was like, I will if, like, as soon as I know. I don't get my schedule until 3 days before the shows happen. So a lot of times it's very last minute stuff. Thankfully I have a great business partner. My family is great about, carrying a lot of that weight. I'm kind of the back end guy for a lot of the stuff. The bartending, I'll be more upfront as the year goes on, but right now we're doing a lot of logistical work, a lot of communications work, which my marketing job paid a lot of dividends there. And same goes for my family's business. We're doing my dad usually does most of the work, and then I do, a lot of the billing and confirmations and stuff like that.
Damn. On the one hand, it sounds like such this madcap crazy life. But on the other hand, you seem really happy. You seem like you're really happy with everything, with like the way it's going.
Well, I tell you what, I've worked jobs ready to work, wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and drive an hour to work in rush hour traffic. And I hated every second of that. Today, I got to wake up at 9 o'clock whenever I decided to wake up. I got to make breakfast. I got to, hop on my phone, talk to people about my music for a little bit. I got to go work on the bar that we're building for the bartending business. And now my band is in my studio that I'm building, setting up some instruments to do some test work. And it, none of it feels like work. And that's the best part, is I love everything that I do. Even for my family's company, that's not hard work. I get to help people in a point where they are not sure where they can turn for something. And then I get to be the thing that comes in and helps them. We're the bartending companies. People are trying to save money for a wedding or an event. They're looking for top quality service. I've been in customer service. I've worked for, as a bartender, I know what people expect. And so I can provide that, and it makes them incredibly happy. Every job from before the bar that I worked at seemed to put me in a place where people were unhappy. When I was a customer service rep, I was an emergency call center representative. Even in the marketing job, I dealt with more complaints about the transportation company that I worked for, and especially the apartment complex. I'll never do that again. That was awful. People just complain. And so they would come to me in their worst moments. And I found that I wanted to be in a place where people came to me either at their worst moment so I can make it better, or their best moment so I can make it even better. And there's no better feeling than being on stage and having people sing along to what I'm doing. And I just lose myself in those moments because I'm so thankful to be there, because I've been in the places that I never want to be again.
When you're like out playing a show, do you ever have to fight the urge to like talk to the bartender saying, hey buddy, I know how you can like do this job better?
No, they're most of them are much better than me. If they're on Broadway, they've been bartending for a good while, and they're like flying through these drinks. Granted, most of the time they're not making anything crazy, but for the bartending business, we do pride ourselves on being very professional, which is not necessarily what you get on Broadway. You just get quick service, which is great because you don't want to wait in line when you're downtown. But for us, whether it's a corporate event or a wedding, if you're having a martini, I'm going to make sure that thing is perfect, and I'm going to do it as quickly but as professionally as possible. So, I've never ordered a martini on Broadway. I probably never will. I don't know how great that would turn out if they're over here doing this and popping four or five caps on a bottle on the other side. So, but no, I try to keep them as separate as possible.
Cause I imagine you're like your mind, you're looking, thinking, this guy could do this and change that and fix that up and do this differently. Just because like,
if I go to a wedding, yes, absolutely. Because unless I'm walking up and they have already memorized my drink from the time before that I came up, I'm like, you don't know what you're doing. You know? But that's just me wanting to always be better. So
exactly. All right. Let us talk about your brand new single, Empty. This one was recently released. I love the song. I read though that this was inspired by Chris Young. Can you tell me how they influenced the music?
Well, actually, it's Chris Stapleton was the one that influenced this song.
Okay.
On one of his songs. Chris Young is another country artist who I aspire from, who has a great low voice like I do. That's one of the reasons why his name is on my my bio. But Chris Stapleton has a song called Whiskey and You. It's a very slow song about how he's basically drinking himself into a pit of misery. And one of the first lines is, there's a bottle on the dresser by your bed and it's empty. And I loved that line. I just thought that was like the most descriptive, most, you know, metaphorical line that he has in that song. And I just love that song so much. And I was like, I need to write a song about that bottle being empty. And so that's where the idea came from. And I took it to a friend of mine who I actually went to high school with, and we sat down in about the first 30 minutes of our co-write, we wrote that chorus for the song. And it was just awesome. I was like, this is exactly the direction I want to go with. And then we hit a brick wall and we couldn't come up with anything for the verses. And so after about 2 hours of sitting there, basically with nothing coming to the table, I told her, I was like, let's wrap this up. We'll come back to it. And I love when inspiration strikes. So later that night I was laying in bed and I could not fall asleep because I kept thinking about the song. And so it was like 2:30 in the morning and I got up and I grabbed my guitar and I was like, I got to finish this. And so I just started playing it and the words just started coming out. And about 30 minutes later, I had the rest of the song. And it's definitely one of my favorite ones. I don't know if it's my absolute favorite, but it was one that when I wrote it, I was like, this has great value to it. Definitely. And definitely was something I'm proud of as far as a songwriter goes, because those do not always happen. You have to cut through a lot of other bad songs to get to some good ones.
What do you ever do with the bad songs? Do you just like try and find some way to kind of like reuse them or use parts of them? Or do you just chuck them and say, starting over?
No, I always hold on to every song that I write, no matter how bad it is, because I can always go back to it. And, you know, there's songs I've held on to for years at this point that I have now finished or that were bad and I rearranged because I maybe wasn't with the right person co-writing it. I wasn't in the right mindset or the right place at the right time. And I've gone back and worked on that. Not a lot of songs are like that, but it's kind of this, it's almost like an audible scrapbook too for me, because I can go back. And even if you listen to the songs that I've released anymore with my first release in 2017, if you listen to that one, then you listen to Empty, there was just a huge change in not only production, but just in songwriting. So I like to follow where I came from and just look at the progress and because I'm always like, man, I feel like I'm never going to be able to write as good a song as the one that I just wrote that I think is great. And just somehow I push through and the next song is, you know, the next one that I get to is a great song. And I'm like, okay, well, how am I ever going to write anything better than that? And so it just is this continuing wheel. And I have to kind of beat myself in my mind thinking about that because a lot of times you can get in the way of writing a great song. But no, I think keeping them is very important. So you can one, see where you came from. And two, you just never know. I mean, maybe a song that I think is terrible, everybody else might like. So that has happened. One of my least favorite songs that I released is probably the most, loved song that everybody enjoys compared to what I think. So really? You never know.
Which one's that?
You never know. It was the one I put out before Empty. It's called Come On Over. I like the song, but out of all the songs that I have released on this project that I'm working on, that's my least favorite, and everybody loves it. I mean, people are like, you got to get that, you know, you got to pitch that to so-and-so and get this with a publisher. And I'm like, really? Like, that song? Not this other one that I think is the most incredible thing that I've ever written? No, you want that? Okay. You know?
Oh, man. That's how it you know, goes sometimes. The one that you're like, least proud of is the one that everyone wants to hear.
That's right. So you never know. And that's why I think it's important to release a lot of music, because even though, or at least play a lot of music out for people and get reactions, so you can kind of gauge what other people think.
Have you ever dropped a song because like you played it like before a crowd and it was like crickets?
Not necessarily dropped it. I definitely test run my songs in crowds for about a year before I really decide whether or not it's something that I'm going to roll with. And the reactions that I get, you know, I kind of base that off of what it's kind of 50-50. It's my value versus everybody else's value. And if I like it and they like it, that's a good combination. If I like it and they don't like it, well, I still like it and it's my choice. So depending on whether I like it enough, I will move forward. But there's other songs that I've played for people and that I thought were great. They're like, you know, like I don't quite get it. And I was like, okay. And so I've set it aside, but that doesn't mean again that it's gone. It's always going to be there. I don't ever want to throw work away because I spend hours. I mean, the writers co-writes that I go into can be 2 to 4 hours long. And sometimes we do multiple sessions on them. So I wouldn't want to throw all that work away and just be like, well, it's no good. You can always use those as references or creative processes later down the road.
Okay. I want to ask next about working with Stephanie Nash. You worked with her in 2018 for the song Never Break. How did you know her and what was it like working together?
So Stephanie and I met kind of on a whim. This was back in my early part as a country singer as well. I was really building my social media brand at this point. And she, I think we had a mutual friend who had shared one of her things from her Instagram page. And I saw that it was like a songwriting thing. And so I reached out and I was like, hey, saw your post. I saw that she was like in my area. And so I was like, if you ever want to get together for a co-write, let me know. And she was like, yeah, sure. And I had no idea that she wasn't, she was also new until we actually met face to face. And she hadn't released any music. She hadn't, you know, done much writing at this point. She's like, I have this whole book of songs that I've written or ideas that I've written. And she's like, if you want to like go through it and find one. And so she had part of Never Break written, but she doesn't play an instrument, which I didn't know either going into it. So we would go in there and she's like, yeah, I have this song. I was like, okay, let's hear it. And she started singing and I was like, well, what key is that in? She's like, I don't know. I was like, okay, well, hold on. Let's figure this out. So I like put the instrumentation to it. And then we collabed on it. And by the time we were done writing the song, we were both kind of looked at each other. And we were like, you know, this could be either one of us could do this song. And then we kind of have it at the same time. We were like, why don't we make this a duet? Because if you just change the pronouns in the song, you can make it a male or a female version. And the idea was we just do both. Why not? And two heads are always better than one. That song has had more success than any other song that I've released. Because it's, again, two people promoting it is always going to be better than just one person. And she's had a very successful career as well. She's gone more towards like the musical agricultural side, which is great because her family owns a dairy farm. And they're doing like a lot of nonprofit stuff for that. And she's got a lot of new songs coming out. So they've had a lot of success. And on the back of that comes success for that song. But it was a lot of fun going in there. It was the first duet that I'd ever recorded. You know, the producer that we worked with is a good friend of mine and he really enjoyed working with both of us. And everybody, I've even had people, on Broadway that have heard my music before. They know that song and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll play it. You know, so it's a great song. It is a slow song, but it has a lot of power to it. And, she's a powerful singer. And I think we really, blended well together on that song.
Are there any other Nashville artists that you're hoping to work with? Cause you never know, they could be listening.
Yeah. My all-time like huge artist kind of crush that I have as far as talent goes is actually not a Nashville guy. He's actually a Texas guy. And that would be Cody Johnson. I'm a huge Cody Johnson fan. He's just the most real songwriter. Every single one of his songs is, I can tell that he had a hand in it or whoever wrote it with him focused on the real story and not just like these cliches or these, you know, basic kind of terms. You know, he talks about specific locations and, you know, these memories he has. And I love that in his songwriting. So it's one of the reasons why Chris Stapleton is such a big influence as well, is because he does a very similar thing. But he has a kind of 90s traditional Southern country sound. And I love that. Maybe it's because I grew up on that sound, but he's a huge inspiration to me. If I ever had the chance to work with anybody, hands down, it would be him. He's also a grassroots artist. So he came from nothing as an independent artist for 10 years and then sold out the Houston Rodeo with 70,000 people with no label, which I think is just the coolest thing. Who needs a label? That's kind of his motto. Now he is signed with one now, but after they were like, we'll let you do anything you want to do. Here's a bunch of money.
That is a great contract. I really like that idea.
Yeah, right.
Dump truck up full of money, do what you do, the end. Simple.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, they're still benefiting, but I'm pretty sure he has free reign because I don't think he would have signed a Fiddy if he didn't have that.
Now, you yourself also work with a company. And yes. How did you come to like their attention and what is the dynamic?
Sure. So it's a management team. It's not a record label. So I still am an independent artist. But it was interesting because Scarlet River is actually based out of the United Kingdom, which most people are like, how does that work? You know, how does your manager work and live in a different country and work with you? And the idea was, again, my marketing and entrepreneurial kind of part of me coming into play here. I met the owner, Rachel Selick, at a Writers Round in Nashville. One of her other artists had come over from the UK, and they were just playing it around that I was at. And I just happened to sit down next to her, and we struck up this conversation, and she told me all about her company and what she did, and I thought that was awesome. And that was it. I didn't really talk to her much after that. I did a couple things with the artists on live stream and stuff. But I reached out and I said, hey, you know, I really want to make a presence outside of the US. And I said, country is really coming alive in the UK. You know, would that be something that you could help me with? And she was like, sure. And so we put together this package and she started managing me as far as the UK. I mean, that's how we have this set up here today. And we have had a ton of success. I've never stepped foot in Europe. And my song, Come On Over, was in their top 20 on the iTunes country charts for the UK, which is awesome. I had a song that I had actually written, or I'd actually performed on, not written, but had performed on, that was up for an International Singer-Songwriter Award for Song of the Year, which I had no clue that it had even made it to that point. But my manager was like, hey, this is up for an award in the UK. And I was like, awesome. So I've made this big splash without even meaning to. But the idea is that there is such an overspill of artists in Nashville. It's so saturated. Why am I trying to cut through everybody else just like everybody else is doing when I can go to a different place where there is next to nobody working, this amazing group of people that are hungry for country music? I mean, they have made really just one big festival every year and it is huge. So I'm thinking, why would I not go and promote myself over there? And so that's kind of been the idea. We've been working together for, I want to say coming up on a year here, because it was during COVID that we started working together, and it's been awesome success. I hope that one day in the near future, they'll lift those travel restrictions so I can go over there and work person to person with them and maybe do a European tour. That's really the dream at this point. You know, it's been a great success thus far.
I was really intrigued because I was reading your bio and thought, okay, he lives in Nashville, but he's a big deal in the UK. How does that happen?
Yeah, you know, she's come with all of these opportunities for these interviews, these podcasts. We did a big radio push over there. So we had songs on the radio stations. And, you know, we haven't even just limited ourselves to the UK. I've done interviews as far as China, New Zealand, that they've booked me as well. So, you know, all over the world, people have been hearing my music, and it's mainly because of my management company, Scarlet River. So I don't even necessarily know how it has become such a big thing, but I think that they're just so, you know, Europeans don't have Southern country accents. So when you get an authentic one, you're like, oh, he must be an American. And then it's just kind of like this attraction because it's something that's different. And I've been really trying to play on that a lot. And it's really upsetting because I was supposed to go over there last year and all the plans got ruined, but I'm hoping for a lot of success when we go over there again, considering that there's just, you know, if there's a sign on a venue that says Nashville artist, it doesn't matter what comes after that. That place is going to be packed because they're country music fans. So.
Yeah. I've had the chance to meet some like other country artists in the UK, and when this first started, I thought, I am surprised that country is such a big deal over there. I always thought country was like a US thing.
Yeah, it has become a big thing in just the past couple of years. Obviously, places like France and Germany are really known for like their electronic music or their rap music. But I think that comes from not being able to have a country accent. You can fake it, of course, but I've worked with people in country music artists in Norway. I've worked with them in the United Kingdom. I've worked with them out of Ireland. Like there's a bunch of different places over in Europe that are sprouting these country artists. And it's really because they love Nashville every single one of them I talked to was like, we love Nashville. It's like the best place ever. And I'm like, it's pretty great. Yeah. But you know, they just love it so much that they want to be a part of it. And so they become country artists because they listen to the same things that I listen to and they love it. So I can definitely see why it's becoming a big thing because, you know, I think trends do kind of overflow. But there are parts of the UK where they're still like, I love Johnny Cash. And I'm like, well, I love Johnny Cash too, but that was like 50 years ago, you know, and they have no idea who any of the new artists are. You know, maybe the newest one is like Garth Brooks. And how long has that been? You know, you're talking 30 years at this point. So, you know, it's interesting, but again, loving the success coming out of Europe.
Now, does seeing things like your songs charting in the UK, being nominated for awards, does that kind of affect what you do professionally? Do you think, okay, I've got to do bigger and better and like more awesome songs because these kinds of things are happening?
Well, it's kind of funny because the songs that are getting nominated are songs that I wrote 3 years ago. You know, it's a process to put out a song. So, you know, I can't just write it and take it to the studio and then put it on the radio the next day. You know, it takes years. I mean, Empty was written in 2018, produced in between 2019 and 2020, and then released this year. So it took a long time for it to be born, to be put out into the world. So, you know, I'm just, you know, beside myself that I'm having this much success from these songs because these are things that I wrote when I was just an amateur as a songwriter. And to know that I have progressed as much as I have as a songwriter and the songs that I'm writing now are just 10 times better than what I wrote before. That's my personal opinion. And if I put those down, what are people going to think? You know, so I'm hoping that this success just continues. But to see, I'm still kind of just in disbelief that my song is in, you know, charting on radio charts. I mean, yeah, I've put forth the effort and I've paid my dues and I even have hired people to promote my music, which is all the right steps. But to actually see it happen is very surreal. Sometimes I'm like, that's not real. I'm dreaming. That's not happening, you know? But it just goes to show that hard work pays off. And yeah, I'm very thankful for the people that have supported me because I have a lot of incredible fans. And at the end of the day, I would not have made it through half the things I've done as a musician if it weren't for them, because they're always there cheering me on, telling me to keep going, put out more. We want more and more. And so I feel like I'm obligated to give it to them now. And I love that because it makes them happy and it in turn makes me happy too.
Okay. So what is next for you?
There's a lot going on right now. So considering that I'm playing full time on Broadway, that is an incredible gig. They're still doing acoustic shows down there because of restrictions. And my band and I are prepping to play on Broadway, which is something we haven't done at this point, which is a huge thing. If you can say, you know, Nashville Broadway performing band, you can pretty much play at any venue that's not like the Ryman across the country, or like a, you know, an amphitheater or something. If you want to play like a 800 person venue, if you tell them that you play on Broadway, they're saying yes. So that's a huge thing for us there. We are also still traveling. So in the midst of trying to book more shows, we are playing shows. So we're heading up to Roanoke, Virginia next weekend. We've got other shows that we're looking at as far down as Florida. I know that last year before COVID hit, I was playing shows up in like Wisconsin. I had a tour booked for the Boston area for about 3 weeks. Was supposed to be in April. Unfortunately, got canceled because of COVID. But we were planning on just traveling and playing, probably doing that maybe for a third of the year. That's the goal. And the rest of the time we'll be here working on new songs and playing on Broadway until we can really get that recognition, which I'm hoping is like a top 20 radio hit. But again, that takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of work and a great team to do it. And by resources, I do mean funds, you know, money. It's something that going into, you're not going to make money in this industry, not for a long time. I'm so far in the red. It's crazy, you know, but the success that can come from those risks, like we talked about, you know, I take these risks and always somehow it comes out on the other side to be better. And even though I spend thousands of dollars on promoters, people are hearing my song on the radio across the country, you know, sometimes 1,000 times a week right now. And that's just incredible because that means more people are listening, more people are looking me up, more people are requesting it to be played, more people are going and, you know, messaging me online saying, hey, come to this venue in my town and play. And that's just another door that's opened. And it might cost a lot of money up front, but the back end, I think, is an endless opportunity.
Excellent. Well, Kyle, man, thanks for joining me. It's been great talking to you. And for the folks at home, you can find Kyle on thekyleelliott.com. It's got all the links. Follow on the socials. And Kyle, definitely looking forward to maybe seeing you in Boston someday. That'd be nice.
I would absolutely love that. I'm working to get back in touch with that booking agent to come up there. But thanks for having me on, Max. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope to do this again. I know we got some new music coming out. Would love to do a promotion for you on the show.
You got it, man. Anytime.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
Picture this: you finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain, hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, folks, that brings this episode to a close. You can follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. Listen to the show on Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. To close things out, enjoy the song Empty, Kyle's newest single, a story of love and loss and how alcohol is used to fix a broken heart. As always, keep those ears open.
Mind is that it's over for you too, so I stay.